In fact, he calls me cantankerous. And if there's anybody cantankerous, I've learned it from here. Well, here he comes now. Here comes the cat.
Oh, yeah, these comedians got to sneak in here from the studio down the hall where they're doing auditions for Comedy Central and disrupt a serious, serious science program. All right, welcome back to the Promise of Tomorrow. We're talking today about the Secrets and Protection Security Seminar coming to Asheville, North Carolina, April 24th of 2001. And we're going to get back to our interview in just a minute with Francina Hulris. And then that's followed by Major General Retired David Burford, who's an expert on security. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But right now, our fountain of useless information. Throw in the coins there. Russell, for today's query.
The fountain of useless information. How can I help
you? Oh, yes, yes, yes. I see we have awakened the spirit of the fountain who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. Okay, oh, spirit of the fountain, here's today's query. Whose curse got its start in 1922 when Lord Carnarvon died of an infection after nicking himself shaving in Egypt? There's the clue, in Egypt.
I have given you my answer. Now you may tell me.
Aha, the spirit of the fountain knows whose curse got its start in 1922 when Lord Carnarvon died of an infection after shaving in Egypt. Yes, if you said King Tut, the King Tut curse. Aha, you are correct. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off with the keynote speaker of the Secrets and Protection Security Seminar coming to Asheville, North Carolina, April 24th. And the keynote speaker, of course, Francina Hulris.
It is so sad to me to see during our work with the Coach State Foundation over the 11 years. As you know, while I was in the nuclear security business, my dad went to glory, and we had a nonprofit Coach State Foundation and a security company going at the same time. So I was able to see in the rural communities the families that we were hiring and also the families that were participating in our charity, our foundation. So today we are doing all of our work with security and safety and protection under the Coach State Foundation. This is where the need is today. And the children, the child trafficking colonel, when I discovered the reports, it was just breathtaking. I couldn't believe it. I said, am I in America? And so we're born and raised at the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We relocated to Jacksonville, Florida, and we're looking at a population in Jacksonville of about 1.2 million. The state of Florida has 22 million. Asheville, we've got about 500,000 population. But the pathway for child trafficking starts at these ports in Florida.
Ooh.
And it heads up that pathway through the South. And it ain't much I can talk about on the phone, but it's certainly an opportunity for us that know how to lead the way to a better life for our next generation leaders. You and I, we're looking to sit down and retire sometime, but right now, the need is great for us to bring the truth, even in racial inequities, reparations, restitution. The country is woke.
Yeah.
And we have to have woke leaders that can show the path forward in a holistic, prosperous way regarding our SSP for the PPT. That's what we're doing under the charity, and this is why these conferences are unique, because no one's doing it the way we do it, Colonel.
Well, I think we need to really point out that there's an enormous difference in the children trafficking, and they're trafficked for prostitution, they're trafficked for enslavement of children, and as servants and this sort of thing. But it's entirely different from the children that are being rescued along the southern border from these terrible conditions in Guatemala and Honduras and these other places, where the United States has initiated the problem over the past 200 years. We've gone in there and we've savaged these areas. We've looted their wealth. We've executed their legally elected officials and installed dictators who have suppressed the people. And these people that are getting out of these countries are leaving oppressive areas and coming to America. And then we're decrying the fact that we're rescuing these children on the border. And I would think that that's a big part of the Coach Tate Foundation, be able to alleviate some of this hardship for these children somehow or other. I would hope that you'd be a part of that too.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are a solution to the problem. We are the solution, and I have these reports on my desk this morning about the number of children and a little bit about where they came from, the background, and there is a dichotomy that we all need to understand. And I like how you pointed that out. There is a difference between the prostitution and the drug carteling and the profiteering that's of the bad when these children and humans are trafficked for money and sex. But there is also a group of children and families that are fleeing violence. They come into a place to be free. America, everybody that fought for this country said, we're fighting for the land of the free. Are we free? So we have to ensure that Coach Tate, we're building safe houses now, Colonel. As a licensed real estate agent in the state of Florida, we've been able to place our license with the Coach Tate Foundation and leave this safe housing development for these children, a place for them to come in a community with their parents, or if they're alone, that they have a safe place where they can come and get their minds together. They make good, give them good training, good skills, where they can become legal. If they're not legal, there's a process that they can feel trusted. They can feel that there is trust and there is real help here in America. And it's going to start with the Coach Tate Foundation. We're going to take care of these children and make sure they get to a good place here.
I'm so heartened to hear what you're saying, Francina. That is just wonderful. As you and I spoke a couple of days ago, it reminded me of Diaz 100 years ago, the president of Mexico, who made the comment. He said, "Poor Mexico, so far from God and so close to the United States." It was very, very interesting. And the other thing, too, is that the people see these children at the southern border. I saw a local newscaster here point out about these coyotes, they call them, the people that are bringing, chaperoning the children up here to the border. They climbed a fence and dropped a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old over the fence and then went away. And the newscaster said, "This is awful. They abandoned those children." Well, they didn't abandon the children. The children were reunited with their mother here in the States. If they would have abandoned the children, they would have left them in the desert or on the other side of the wall. But instead, they dangerously climbed the wall and deposited the children on this side so the kids could be reunited with their parents. But the newscaster styled entirely different. I think it's a terrible shame. People don't understand what we're doing to help these children.
Well, it is terrible. And as a broadcast journalist yourself for 50 years, which I admire, we've seen a whole lot of stuff. And I'm still learning. But what I see today, it is a false narrative. And some of our media industry needs to be reorganized. We need to push the reset button as far as the news we're bringing out to the public on what's really going on and what's not. What are we seeing on this screen every day? As you know, it's a social programming. It's a message that they want us to see. But we have to let folks know what we know about the truth. And the truth is, these are human beings fleeing to a place where they're seeking refuge. You know, in the Bible, they said even some of them, Jesus had to flee.
Yeah.
From violence. And we're in this Holy Week this week, but you know, the passion of the God, of our Creator, for creating a better way for this next generation. I'll be 60 years old, Colonel, in October. At some point, I guess in the next 20, 30 years, I hope to retire and know that we train up some good leaders who know how to lead.
You're never going to retire, Francina. I know you. You're too active. I'm very proud of the things that you're doing, and it's so good that you're watching for the children. You got the safe houses. You're running the seminar, Secrets and Protection, the security seminar in Asheville, April 24th, and then you're going to follow it right up in Jacksonville, Florida, May 21st. So I'm real proud of you. Is there anything we missed? Is there something that you want to be sure and include?
Well, you know, I want to say, Colonel, at the end of the day, the end determines the means. We're at a critical time in our country right now, America. The land of the free is a new day. And we as the human race, must come together in whatever way in Dallas, Texas, in North Carolina, Florida, everywhere. It's everywhere. We have to come together as one, and I encourage everyone listening to this broadcast today is to reach out to the Coach Tate Foundation, because we have the right solution for the people, not for the politics, for the people, and it's sustainable. We're not talking about a grant or house or a give out or handout. We believe in a hand up. And so we're looking for like-minded partners, Colonel, and leaders such as yourself and Burford and Hooten and others who want to join in with us. There's a lot going on, but Coach Tate Foundation has the solution that will be sustained over a long period of time. And we have our website that's available, www.CoachTateFoundation.com. And the phone numbers and our contact information is listed from there. And come to the conference. Register virtually. You can sit in the conference of your own home and learn about some of these secrets and protection that you need today for your tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll give that information again at the end of the program for anybody who missed it, the phone number and the website and that sort of thing. And Francina, thank you so very much for the fine work that you're doing in the spirit of universal brotherhood. I think it's just sensational. We got to quit thinking us and them. We have to realize that we're all part of the human race. And you're right. It was a thing taught by Jesus of Nazareth. And for those who believe in him and those who bother to read the Bible, it was of love and universal brotherhood. The parable of the Good Samaritan, all those things that were taught that seem to be conveniently set aside when we start thinking of us and them. And I'm so proud of what you're doing with the Coach Tate Foundation, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Colonel, and blessings to you, too, because we have some good work to do together. Look forward to it.
I do, too. Thanks a bunch. Now stand by for Major General David Burford.
Well, it's more of a personal philosophy, and I guess it might be more pertinent in the troubled times we see currently, whether it's political or activism of any kind. Protection comes in many flavors and at many levels, and it really starts in personal protection. While we have law enforcement agencies and bureaucracies that try to protect us, at the end of the day, it's up to us to take steps to do what we can to protect ourselves first. Let's take cyber, where one of the important implications of the cyber availability is infrastructure. Without the internet and without the electricity to run it, which of course comes from power plants, then we'd be pretty out of luck on all fronts. It's just none of this stuff runs. So those infrastructure targets become critical nodes of vulnerability for our country. My job at Southern Nuclear was as director of fleet nuclear security, centered not so much around the office, but around the power plants and how you secure those who would do pretty much violent action to take those out of service and penalize the customers and whoever was dependent on electric flow.
Yeah, we in Texas saw firsthand in February what happens when the power goes out. We take it for granted every day, but an ice storm hit. Our studio is located in Dallas, and the whole state got iced over, and the power failed. And what's really ironic about it is it was a number of years ago. I happened to be talking to the head of the electric security people in Texas, ERCOT, and also the local supplier, Oncor. And they were very nonchalant about the whole thing, about the power. You know, I said, what happens when we get a cascading power failure like what has happened before in this country? And I was assured that within 5 years, power failure would be a thing of the past. Well, we saw that didn't happen, and now the governor has got egg on his face, and so does the current administration, because they didn't do anything to protect us. Do you feel the power supply for us is pretty secure?
I'd say it's as reliable as we can afford to make it currently. I think the state of Texas probably did itself an economic service by creating a grid that didn't answer to anyone but itself, but as a result, they sealed themselves off from the redundancy that some of the other parts of the nation enjoy. And therein became a problem is you can generate it, but if you can't distribute it, it doesn't matter. It also shows, as you pointed out, that how critical that is to everything that we do, whether it's hospitals or the internet or people at home with young children or sick relatives. It is something we depend on, and we do take it for granted, clearly.
Well, I guess the question is that we don't realize how important it is until we don't have it. A lot of people don't realize that even our water supply uses water pumps, electric water pumps, to pump the water to the water towers and things, that we will lose water too. Should people be concerned over a sudden and extended loss of electricity? And what can they do to defend themselves from that?
Well, they should really prepare for any kind of interruption of life as we know it, whether it's electricity or water or high winds or a destroyed residence. Have yourself a plan. Know where you're going to go. Know where you're going to meet up with your family members and have some location as best you can communicate. Cell towers may be down. So all the things that we rely on may not be available at all. And you need to go back to the primitive thought of how do I sustain and defend my family if I live out in a cabin in the woods? That's that kind of mentality. That might mean storing some non-perishable food, some drinkable water, a water filter, blankets, these space blankets they sell for survivalists. Those are pretty important. And what do you do if everything goes away? And it's not to scare people, but it's just to get them thinking a little bit about what you would do in case this all goes away for you.
So maybe a good advice would be to, even though if you're not a camper, to keep camping equipment close by in your garage. Maybe a Sterno stove that you can burn inside the house without propane, so you're not asphyxiated. You told me you bought a generator last summer in case there was a problem. But you've got to run that outside. You can't bring that in the house. And recently, power was out for you when tornadoes hit Alabama. Whereabouts in Alabama are you?
I'm in Birmingham, just south of the city, and the F3 tornado came through last Thursday, a week ago. Destroyed 80 to 100 homes. There were 5 casualties across the state. In my neighborhood alone, they probably destroyed 20, 25 houses within eyesight of my residence. We live on a high ridge line, and Alabama, whether people know it or not, does get ice and snow. But when it does, we don't really have the equipment to remove it because it's not that often. We don't invest in that. And because it's hilly, when the roads get icy, everything stops. You can't get any supplies in or out, and the power lines come down. And this has happened a number of times over my lifetime in Alabama, and I just decided it was time to protect my family from the eventuality that might happen. It's interesting, I had a number of neighbors follow suit as soon as I got mine. They wanted one too. You said something earlier I want to go back to, if you don't mind, where you said that the grid was invulnerable and outages would be a thing of the past. One of the things I've inculcated in my life is don't ever say never. It's just like the mantra a couple of years ago where they said nuclear power would be too cheap to even meter. That gets people energized for something that's really great with no downside. That just doesn't happen, whether it's a job or homework or a, you know, house where the roof leaks or the sidewalk cracks, don't ever say never, because these things do happen. And you have to sort of think your way through as what if. What would I do if? And it doesn't mean go out and buy a lot of things. It doesn't mean rent a second residence. It's just get yourself prepared. We've got a couple of giant Tupperware containers at home I call the go bags. And if we had to load up the car, leave a residence, and go somewhere and sustain ourselves for 2 weeks or a month, we're able to do that. Cold weather, hot weather, we've got things in the tub that would sustain us over that period of time. I have an advantage. I have some survival training because of the military. Some people don't have that. Likewise, there's a safety issue, because when you have something, inevitably, somebody wants to take it from you. So there seems to be a sort of an implied task of self-protection in that as well.
I would say so. That's good advice. I'm glad you went back and touched on that, because it was a big shock, of course, to a lot of people when all of Texas lost power. And a lot of people died because they couldn't stay warm enough. So there are things people can do to just have stashed away. And as you're talking about, you've got that Tupperware containers for your emergency in case you have to leave in a hurry and go places. And I suppose that would have to do with important papers, too, in case the house is destroyed in a tornado. You would be able to want to have your passport and maybe insurance papers and other things like that all in one fireproof container. Would you think that's probably good advice?
I think that's a great idea, but, you know, I'd carry it a step further. I would make a copy of all those important papers and put it in an identical fireproof, destruction-proof container, and keep it or hand it off to a friend for safekeeping. You can lock it in case all of yours inevitably gets destroyed for some reason. You've only got that one copy.
Another thread I want to touch on, if I can, if you feel that you want to speak to it, but we saw firsthand a big example in January of domestic terrorism. And it seems and has been said that currently that the biggest threat to America is not international terrorism, but domestic terrorism. Can you speak to that, and can you suggest a way of us defending ourselves from domestic terrorism?
I would not want to say one more so than the other and focus people on domestic terrorism when there still is a threat of foreign terrorism as well. Right now we're kind of at each other's throats on a number of different issues, and we are still, at the end of the day, we're still all Americans. And you'll find that people are coming to our country because of what we have. They're not leaving our country to get what somebody else has, if you think of it in the macro sense. I just hope that people will be optimistic about recovery from the current situation we're in. I think with the vaccinations being distributed widespread and people taking a big sigh of relief and businesses getting back on their feet and getting cranked up and supplies being put back on shelves, we're going to make it. We got this. It's just going to take some time.
Okay, thank you. Major General David Burford. Okay, once again, that Secrets and Protection Security Seminar coming to Asheville, North Carolina, April 24th. More on that at Coach Tate Foundation. That's COACHTATE Foundation.com.
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Oh, I think that I'm optimistic. I think the United States will find its way out of its own dilemma, will find the best route to help humanity. And I think that I certainly hope that when the United States do something, please do it for humanity and not just for the United States.
Breakfast at a busy restaurant with a very fascinating Dr. Dashuan Feng from Macau University.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You live tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there. I am waiting. We'll be right back.